Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, good, bad, crazy martinis, as always, and all three of them relate to current Obama administration scandals. Surprise, surprise. We start with the IRS, courtesy of the Washington Post, surprisingly. They actually were talking to IRS employees as they walked out of the building in Cincinnati last week, and they talked to one guy who they described as a determination staffer in khakis as he left work on Tuesday afternoon, and this was his take on the scandal. Quote, "We're not political. We are people on the local level are doing what we are supposed to do. That is why there are so many people here who are flustered. Everything comes from the top. We don't have any authority to make those decisions without someone signing off on them. There has to be a directive," he went on to say, and pretty much echo what Miller said, that there wasn't any bias. They just grouped all these things together for efficiency's sake. But, Jim, the idea that this was just a couple of folks in the Cincinnati office who decided to hatch a plan over lunch one day pretty much is getting scuttled by the people who now realize they could be the ones who are put up for blame on this.
First of all, the initial excuse of anybody caught with their hand in the cookie jar is always of, oh, it was our frontline employees and they were improperly trained and improperly managed. And it's just a little, you know, the little fish are the real problem. Maybe, you know, this is familiar to anybody who remembers Andrew Breitbart and James O'Keefe exposing the Acorn scandal. So we kept saying, oh, it's just a few bad apples in one office. And then they showed another video, and then they showed another video, and then they showed another video. And all of a sudden you realized it was very widespread. Well, and everyone was like, oh, this is just going on in Cincinnati. Never mind that the Cincinnati office was the one that was in charge of determining how to handle these requests for tax exempt status from these types of groups. But the answer from this khaki wearing fellow, which, by the way, I feel kind of bad that, you know, whoever wore khakis that day is now on the suspect list, according to the Washington Post. That's why always dress like your peers so that no reporter can ever describe you by your attire. In this comment, if you know people in the federal government, there are a few who might be, you know, raving partisans with, you know, over uncontrollable passions or stuff. But most of them have it drilled in at a fairly early age that partisan stuff is not something you want to get involved with because it begins unbelievable amounts of scrutiny and, you know, people reviewing you, et cetera, et cetera. You know, federal employees are taught about the Hatch Act. They may or may not follow it. And I think it's pretty obvious that we have a wholesale breakdown in the notion that federal employees are not supposed to engage in a partisan manner. But this guy's point that, look, everything comes from the top. We don't have any authority to make those decisions without someone signing off on them. There has to be a directive. It makes fairly common sense. I mean, and the whole point of this article, which was kind of in the Washington Post style section, kind of a strange place for it, but kind of this featurey story of what it was like, what it's like to work in that Cincinnati office right now, and for everybody to think that more or less you are the root of all evil. And what we're seeing here is that they're saying, look, we could not undertake this sort of thing on our own. We are trained from day one. You got to have a paper trail, and you got to make sure your employer, your boss has signed off on it. Blaming your underlings is an old, old story in Washington and frankly everywhere else. But I think this kind of says that, of course, the first spin put out by the administration is false and designed to be an excuse. There are two things that jump out of this. The first is that, yes, of course, as we suspected, somebody high up knew about this and was, you know, directing this and was completely okay with this. But what was really intriguing is that nobody underneath these people tried to be a whistleblower and tried to say, wait a minute, this is wrong. We're not supposed to have one set of rules for one party or ideology and another set of rules for the other party or ideology. You can argue about this is a problem that comes from Obama, the fish rots from the head, to quote Michael Dukakis. It says actually a great deal about the culture of the IRS that nobody on here said, wait a minute, why are we going after just these groups and not the other groups? You know, if the story had been that the IRS was hassling grassroots groups across the spectrum, it'd be a very different story. But unfortunately, it looks like they had one set of rule because they didn't like Republicans, didn't like conservatives, didn't like Tea Partiers, weren't big of pro-Israel groups, weren't big of pro-lifers. I mean, you can see a common thread running through all these things. So it's a quote that deserves more scrutiny and more spotlight, and I think kind of says, look, this every indication is that this problem is as bad as we think it is, and it says that basically our government agencies can no longer be trusted to operate in a nonpartisan manner.
On to the second martini, and one of the other major scandals that didn't get quite as much attention as the IRS scandal last week, is the Department of Justice seizing phone records for 21 different lines, work lines, home lines, cell phone lines for different reporters. Gary Pruitt, CEO of the Associated Press, was on Face the Nation and I think summed up the frustration and the seriousness of the scandal right now with the Department of Justice very well when he's talking to Bob Schieffer.
I don't know what their motive is, but I can tell you their actions are unconstitutional. We don't question their right to conduct these sort of investigations. We just think they went about it the wrong way. So sweeping, so secretively, so abusively and harassingly and overbroad that it constitutes, that it is an unconstitutional act.
And if that weren't enough, a story from the May 19th edition of the Washington Post talks about another such investigation. Quote, when the Justice Department began investigating possible leaks of classified information about North Korea in 2009, investigators did more than obtain telephone records of a working journalist suspected of receiving the secret material. They used security badge access records to track the reporter's comings and goings from the State Department. According to a newly obtained court affidavit, they traced the timing of his calls with a State Department security advisor suspected of sharing the classified report. They obtained a search warrant for the reporter's personal emails. The State Department worker was Stephen Jin-Woo Kim, they believe, and James Rosen of Fox News was the journalist. So, Jim, it's clear that the Justice Department, as reporters and liberal reporters have pointed out at briefings in the last week, the administration is only too happy to go swinging the heavy lumber at any reporters who are digging into stuff they don't want people to know about.
It's very eye-opening. I kind of salute the Washington Post for getting that story. First of all, when someone leaks classified information, traditionally what happens is government goes after the leaker, that is what is criminal. Reporters publish classified information. We go back to the Pentagon Papers for this sort of thing. But the argument of the newspaper is, look, there is a public right to know this sort of thing. There's a public interest in this sort of thing, particularly if there's some sort of scandal involved, government wrongdoing involved, something like that. Now, the interesting thing is that in this case, the what was so classified and so sensitive and got this big investigation rolling, Greg, was the revelation that the North Koreans were contemplating or likely to respond to UN sanctions with a nuclear test. Does that strike you as unbelievably shocking, Greg? It's the North Koreans. This is kind of what they do. And then the next thing that seemed so shocking about it was that this apparently threatened national security for the public to know this. Really? Now, to their credit, they get a court order. They get a judge to sign off on investigating these things. Having said that, it is a little unnerving to see the government going into James Rosen's personal emails. Who knows what kind of information was in there? And what are the stuff you find when you have a fairly broad investigation into a reporter's emails and stuff like that. But then the next thing is that the way they've talked about this and the legal write-up for this, look, if you leak classified information, that is a crime. The government has the right to prosecute you, et cetera, et cetera. But in the legal treatment of this, they're referring to Rosen as a conspirator to release classified information. Well, getting information to the public is what reporters do. I mean, by this standard, Woodward and Bernstein are conspirators. The language of this administration basically says that a reporter who brings information to the public that was classified is somehow committing a criminal offense and opens the door towards prosecuting James Rosen of Fox News. Every reporter who has ever written anything that is classified, brought classified information to the attention of the public, is kind of not necessarily quaking in their boots this morning, but kind of left, with a chill down their spine, suggesting that, it could be criminal to publish classified information. Generally, the government does not go out and prosecute people. It goes after the leakers. It goes after the person who was entrusted with this information and told to not let the public know about it, but not to go after the reporter. What you're hearing here is, I think it was Eli Lake who said, look, it is no longer appropriate to describe this as the Obama administration's war on leaks. It is the Obama administration's war on journalism. Coming on top of the AP phone record seizing, a lot of reporters are looking at this administration in a chilling new light. And, it kind of suggests that this administration doesn't really see any checks on their power. And ultimately, as I write in the New York Daily News today, a good time for me to plug this, their attitude is the ends justify the means. And if they have to smash, traditional understandings of the First Amendment and reporters' right to inform the public, they'll do that.
And it'll be interesting to see, I think, Jim, whether it's immigration, the bringing back of the gun bill perhaps in the Senate, whether these journalists will turn this frustration and skeptical eye into their everyday reporting, even on issues where they're sympathetic with the administration, or whether they'll just revert back to the cheerleading that they've done in the past. It'll be interesting to see how much this really changes the relationship long term, not just in reaction to this one and now two stories, at least, that we're hearing about. On to martini number three now, and back to the IRS scandal. The American Spectator reporting something, Jim, that could either be extremely coincidental or potentially extremely telling. I'm guessing one of the committees will look into this as the investigation proceeds. And that is, in 2010, the president, of course, at the beginning of that year, denouncing the Citizens United decision in a State of the Union address, out on the campaign trail saying, we have to get a better idea of what's going on with these Tea Party groups. We could have foreign corporations determining elections and all this stuff. It turns out, through this reporting, that the president met with the head of the IRS union the very day before all these troubles started happening in the tax-exempt status application process for these 501c3 and c4 applicants that were conservative groups. So, Jim, it could simply be a coincidence, but it could simply not be.
It's a very unusual set of timing, we could say, for this policy to go into effect right after the president has this meeting. The other thing which is left kind of scratching my head is Greg, why does the president of the United States need to meet with the head of the union of IRS employees? What are they talking about there? This is the argument people have argued against public sector unions for a long time, that, you know, when a guy like John Corzine, in pursuit of the public sector, you know, state workers, voters, the votes of state workers, he says, I will fight for you, as people enjoy pointing out, who is he fighting against? Okay, if you're the governor of the state, you're management. If you're president of the United States, you're management. Your job is to try to get the taxpayer the best deal that they can, because otherwise, if you don't represent the taxpayer, nobody's going to represent the taxpayer. That, you know, you want to give the government workers the best deal possible. They want the best deal possible. And the only person who's left is, you know, maybe some folks in Congress trying to keep, you know, wages, benefits, and everything to give the taxpayers the most value for what they're paying these workers. Well, in the case of this circumstance, whatever they were talking about, it'd be really fascinating to see what that was about. I'm sure they'll probably invoke executive privilege, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, you know, there's been a very big question about whether Obama ever directed the IRS to go into this, you know, snooping and this special scrutiny of conservatives. And a lot of folks, I think, you know, including the great phone-tossing Kevin Williamson, has pointed out, look, the great thing about liberalism, and he's making air quotes when he says great, is that you don't need to tell someone to do this. They all just people just begin to believe that their purpose is to advance the cause. And this means, you know, cutting corners and acting in unethical behavior and using a government institution as a partisan cudgel. But with this meeting, now we're left wondering what went on in that meeting. Who said what to who? What, you know, did the president even give any kind of indication that he felt that the tax status of Tea Party groups deserved a little extra scrutiny? Late last week, President Obama insisted that he didn't know about the Inspector General's report, not that he didn't know about the treatment of Tea Party groups in general. Interesting wording there. It's Clintonian, you could say. So it's a nice hybrid of Clintonian and Nixonian. And we have Clixon, you could say, is what this presidency is turning into.
Jim, great to be back with you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.